Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you in the aftermath of what was not a pretty game for the Milwaukee Bucks, a first round playoff loss to the Orlando Magic on Tuesday. It was a surprising way for the Milwaukee Bucks to start the 2020 postseason. Milwaukee, not really competitive for most of the game, wound up losing 122-110. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, and on the other line, we got to talk about it. Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The Bucks have not been great in the bubble to this point anyway. But I think everyone thought once the playoffs began, it would be time to get down to business. We saw the Bucks crush the Detroit Pistons at the same stage of the postseason last year. It's not going to happen this time around as the Bucks go down 1-0 in this best of 7 series. Matt, I don't really know where to begin, so I think I'll just frame it this way. Was it really as bad as it seemed? Is there any silver lining, any takeaway here? Because honestly, I don't know if I've seen the Bucks play this poorly, and I'm just kind of grasping at straws. So is as bad as it seems? Are we all panicking for no reason at all? What is your takeaway here?
Well, as I've long said, people can choose to feel how they want to feel. They can panic when they want to panic. I'm not going to be the arbiter of people's emotions, but it was really bad.
I am going to say that.
Obviously, as you mentioned, the 8 seeding games, like whatever happened there, I just refused to put stock into it, at least before now, because it's like, okay, like they went 3-5 in the seeding games, and their starting lineup played 16 minutes together, and they were playing like super deep rotations, and Frank Mason was getting all kinds of minutes, and DJ Wilson, and all that stuff, and they had nothing to play for. So like, if they even played their guys, like, and they didn't play well, it's like, okay, well, whatever. Like, they have no motivation. But now, like, the playoffs are here. They had 3 days of practices where they, like, repeatedly said, like, yes, we weren't who we wanted to be in the seeding games, and we need to get back to it, and we're going to get back to it, and we're going to be better. And we've been really focused and locked in, and the intensity is ratcheted up, and we're not taking the magic, lightly, and, we're going to, be better. And they weren't. And they weren't even close. Like, they weren't even close to being, like, not just better, but, like, where they are supposed to be. I mean, this is a game where, on paper, it shouldn't have been close at all. I mean, the Magic had 4 guys missing, 4 guys who, if they were healthy, would have played, like, rotational minutes. Like, this isn't a team that, no disrespect to the Magic, but this isn't a team that's filled with world beaters, right? Like, this is a team of guys who, had a, 33-40 record during the regular season, who have the worst record of any team left in the bubble. A team that the Bucks swept 4 times. They beat 4 times in the regular season. And granted, that seems like it was forever ago now, because it was. But it wasn't so long ago that it shouldn't be true that the Bucks still have the better team. And so for the Bucks to come out and play the way they did on Tuesday, I can understand why people would be frustrated and panicking about that result. That was a really, really bad game by the Bucks, where they only really showed urgency like at 2 points in the game, like really and truly. It was at the start of the game when they got out to like an 8-2 start and seemed like they were kind of in a rhythm and doing what they wanted to do. And then at the start of the third quarter, when they came out and turned a 10-point deficit into a 1-point deficit, they could have even tied the game had Chris Middleton made the 3rd of 3 free throws. And that was all in like 3.5 minutes. And like, they had those stretches where things were going really well, and then things would just disintegrate. And none of it was stuff that like was surprising in and of itself. Like, Steve Clifford back forever ago, when the Bucks played in Orlando, I remembered him saying like, hey, like, we got to shoot the 3 ball well, because they're going to give us some open threes, and we need to defend really well. And like, that's it. Like, that's the trick. Like, that's how you beat the Bucks. Like, you shoot threes well, and you defend really well. And the Magic didn't shoot threes like exceedingly well. I think they were really good. I think they ended up being like 39%, 16 of 42, or something like that. But it wasn't like they were like, you know, shooting the lights out. It's not like that was the biggest issue. It's that their defense was really good, and they were sinking in the paint, and they were cutting off passing lanes and forcing turnovers, and the Bucks just couldn't find a way to get any type of offensive flow going. And they didn't really, I don't think they even tried enough things to make that happen. So, and I'm not too surprised that Bud played like 11 guys in the first quarter, or, you know, in the first half, whatever it was. Because that's what he does. Like, that's what he did last year in the playoffs. This isn't new. This isn't surprising to me. It's just how many guys didn't play well. I thought Giannis played well. I thought Eric Bledsoe played pretty well. I thought that in the second half in particular, George Hill played pretty well. And that's the list. I think Wesley Matthews was good in a small number of minutes, or a relatively small number of minutes, but not great. Not all that, you know, notable. Yeah, I thought there were a few other guys, like, you know, Kyle Korver had a couple, you know, good shots and things like that, but it wasn't anything that stood out other than I thought Giannis and Bledsoe and a little bit of George Hill in the second half. But it was all the stuff that we normally talk about. This was the Bucks, you know, being the new Bucks, not the Bucks who we've seen in the past. It's bubble Bucks. Being bubble Bucks, and the problem is that hasn't been very good.
I think that's the primary concern here, is that there's now a track record, and I think, you know, what you said I agree with as far as those seeding games, you just can't evaluate them the same as other games. They just aren't meaningful. They're not. And that plays into the intensity, that plays into the way rotations are developed, everything. So, and that's not the Bucks' fault. They came to the bubble not needing to play hard in those games. Of course, they're going to not play exactly like they would play a playoff game. They need to get healthy. They want to be healthy at this stage, and they are. So, I don't think you can really say this is truly a trend, but now after seeing this first game, you start to look back on that track record of these eight games and you think to yourself, maybe they really just don't have whatever they had before. Maybe they're just in a scratch and claw mode now for some reason. Even going back to the last few games before the COVID stoppage, I mean, they're, again, more mitigating circumstances. Giannis didn't play in those games. In one game, nobody played. But they did go in with a three-game losing streak, and you're trying to find the last time the Bucks were really the Bucks. You also mentioned the word urgency, and I know that some of the guys after the game were pushing back against the idea that the Magic played harder, because the implication there is it's an effort issue. But I'm curious what you think about that, because, like you said, there were 2 points in the game, and 2 points only, where the Bucks looked truly engaged. I mean, I don't want to make that sound disparaging, but that's what it seemed like. The defense just gave up so many open looks, and even Giannis and Bledsoe, who were, like you said, two of the bright spots, they're taking pull-up threes early in the shot clock where it seemed like there was just, I don't know what you'd call that, just puzzling, seeming like they're surrendering on possessions. What do you make of that? Do you feel like there was something simply intensity-wise that the Bucks just didn't apply here, or were they out-schemed?
I mean, it was a little bit of both, but it was definitely, you know, some of the first part. Like, if you watch the game, I watch the game, a lot of people watch the game, no one's going to say that the Bucks played harder than the Magic did. No one's going to say that they were tougher, that they were more cohesive. Like, no one, they just weren't. Like, they weren't the better team. And it wasn't close, I don't think. And it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned people talking about, you know, that they were playing hard or whatever, or Giannis saying that, you know, the first question that Giannis answered was basically, you know, the gist of it was what needs to be changed, like, you know, what needs to be different. And his response was just got to play harder. It's got to make them feel uncomfortable. We're doing it at times. I do it for longer stretches, you know, and saying that they need to be more aggressive, get in passing lanes, use their hands, a little more physical, get them off the rhythm. So I followed up to that saying, hey, like, we're talking about like playing hard or playing harder, like, in the playoffs. Like, how frustrating is that, or how hurtful is that like, you guys aren't doing that? And that's when Giannis pushed back. He's like, oh, they weren't playing harder than us. They played better, but we played hard, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, but then he continued to say, like, you know, we got to play harder. So even if they play better, we can still win. And it's like, I mean, my takeaway from all of that is like, we're kind of like, you know, grasping at straws a little bit. Like, If you need to play harder, you didn't play hard enough. Like, you didn't play to the level that the playoffs require. Like, you didn't play hard, like, relative to what you need. And I think that there were definitely some moments of frustration. We saw, you know, when the game was coming back from a commercial break that, you know, Brook Lopez had, like, stomped and kicked a chair during the timeout at one point. And when they were down, like, 18, or they must have been down 13 at that point, because they had been down 18. Giannis came in and spurred a five-point run. But, you know, just the whole team was off. And like they're what like they care like they want to be better, you know. But yeah, as I mentioned, like Steve Clifford, like he's a good coach. Like he knows exactly what the Bucks are gonna do. I mean, everyone knows what the Bucks are gonna do, right? Like it's not like rocket science. What the Bucks are doing. They're playing their coverages. They're running their kind of like motion random offense and all that stuff. Like they're doing things they want to do. It's just that, you know, when you've had this long to prepare for a team, and if you're the Magic, I'm sure like the Bucks were preparing for the Nets and the Magic during the hiatus. So I'm sure the Magic were preparing for the Bucks to some extent during the hiatus. And, you know, I'm sure they're saying, okay, like here's exactly what we need to do and here's how we need to do it. And if we can execute that game plan, we can win. And you know, the Bucks, I'm sure, went into the game with a game plan too, about what to do with the Magic and things like that. But it didn't look like, I mean, I think we can very clearly argue that they didn't follow up on it. They didn't do it. They didn't execute it the way that they needed to. And I think that's probably the part for a lot of people that's really frustrating, is that, you know what the Magic are going to do. You know they're going to go to Nikola Vucevic. He is an all-star, you know, or he was an all-star last year. However, you know, once you're an all-star, you're an all-star. But he's an all-star caliber player for a reason. He's the best player they have. Of course they're going to feed him. Of course they're going to play through him. And the Bucks never had a way of figuring out, like, how to slow him down. I mean, 15 of 24, like, he was dominant. And, you know, the Magic's defense, like, I mean, the Bucks know basically all the time what teams are going to do. They're going to sink. They're going to clog the paint. They're going to make it really hard for Giannis to get to the hoop. They're going to load to him. But they couldn't do anything about it. Like they didn't move the ball well enough. They're taking shots early in the shot clock at times, not you know, zipping it around, not finding the open man, sometimes trying to force things. Like that's the kind of head scratching stuff where you're like, okay, why are they not, you know, either sticking to the plan or working a little bit harder to try and get a better shot instead of settling at times? It seemed like they were, you know, just kind of trying to go out there and will themselves, like, by talent to win, but they actually need to be able to, you know, not just kind of go one-on-one and out-talent the Magic. They need to actually, you know, play the game and adjust, and we'll see what they're able to do for game two, because obviously game one, what they were doing wasn't working.
Let's go back and talk about Nikola Vucevic a little bit. Some of this will tie into kind of what it is from an X's and O's standpoint that the Bucks philosophically do on defense, but you mentioned it. The Magic were depleted as could be. They didn't have Aaron Gordon. They didn't have MCW. They didn't have Mo Bamba. Jonathan Isaac isn't here. Al-Farouq Aminu has not been in the bubble at all. Evan Fournier didn't score until the final, like, 5 minutes. I mean, they were an absolute one-man show. Nikola Vucevic was it. And time and time again, he had open looks when he clearly had the hot hand on Tuesday. Why, again, this is maybe philosophically speaking, but why is there no adjustment there? Why was there not greater attention paid to Nikola Vucevic? And maybe there was, but that is a criticism you have heard of Mike Budenholzer before, that he doesn't stray at all from his philosophy, especially on defense. You know, it's implemented and that's just what they do. And certainly the Bucks are going to give up three-pointers. We've seen it time and time again. It is part of the fabric of how they defend. They keep the paint protected. But clearly, Nikola Vucevic was a problem, and he remained a problem throughout the course of the game. So why would the Bucks not be capable of dealing with him in the second half? Why would they not see some sort of adjustment?
Well, there was a little bit of an adjustment where, you know, I mean, Giannis was talking about it after the game, and like, yes, like, Vucevic had a great game. Like, he did make, you know, he made open shots, he made tough shots, he made a lot of different things, inside, outside. He played great. So, like, there is that. But at the same time, like Giannis mentioned, like, they don't want to switch. Like, they want to keep, you know, their matchups. They want to keep their scheme. And they don't want a smaller guy in a pick and roll to have to deal with Vuce in the post. And so in the third quarter, they started switching him and having whoever their guard is or whoever it was, having to switch on him in the post, you know, hoping they could slow him down. I know there were times that Pat Connaughton was on him. I know Bud has done that in the past where Pat, you know, is a guard, but he is very strong. And so he can kind of handle himself a little bit more in the post. He did play a post position when he was in college, so he has some of that experience and the footwork and all that type of stuff to be able to do things like that on defense. But it didn't work. Like when they were, you know, when they had Brook Lopez on him, when they had, you know, a guard on him, when they had Marvin Williams, it didn't really matter. Like Vucevic was getting what he wanted, and when he wasn't, like he was flanked by guys who, yes, Fournier wasn't doing very well, but Gary Clark, like, he knew exactly what his job was, which was to stand out behind the three-point line and just jack shots when he was open. And he put up 12 threes. He made four of them. It's not, you know, an incredible percentage, 4 of 12, but, you know, that's his job. Like, just don't be in the way, basically. Don't go into the hoop. Don't get in Vooch's way. Don't get in the guard's way. Just stand out there, and if the Bucks don't respect you, shoot. And, you know, that worked out pretty well. I mean, James Ennis shot well. You know, Markel Fultz got off to a great start, 4 for 4. He's making some drives to the hoop, some mid-range jump shots where, you know, the Bucks are going to let guys shoot mid-range jump shots if they are kind of off the dribble and then they stop and pop for a jumper. You know, those are shots that the Bucks are not necessarily going to have a problem with. Like, they'd rather you pull up from 16, 17, 18 feet, then get right to the hoop or take a three. Though with Markel Fultz, maybe you want him to shoot more threes. He was 1 of 4. He's not a great 3-point shooter. But, you know, they're going to live with that. Like, Terrence Ross didn't shoot the ball very well from three. I mean, he was 0 for 3 on threes, but he was finding ways to get open in the mid-range, in the paint, and get buckets. So like, these guys, like, they found ways through the Bucks defense where at times guys were either slow to rotate, slow to help, or didn't at all. And it feels like, you know, the Bucks defense, which was so good during the pre-COVID hiatus, or whatever you want to call it, they just haven't gotten that timing, that communication, whatever it is, they haven't gotten it back, at least not consistently. And so you would expect things to be better, especially in the minutes where Brook Lopez and Yas Adetokunbo and Eric Bledsoe on the court, those guys are all really good individual defenders, and as part of a team scheme are really good. But we just didn't see it from the game on Tuesday. And so, again, like, all this is going to come down to how they respond. Because last year we saw them in the second round against the Celtics, you know, kind of lay an egg in game one. And that was at Pfizer Forum. That wasn't at a neutral court. That was at Pfizer Forum. And it seemed like the sky was falling then. And suddenly, you know, the Bucks were able to pick up the pieces and wipe the floor of the Celtics over 4 straight games to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Could they do that again? With the Magic, like, sure, that's totally reasonable. That's within the realm of possibility. But I think that this time around, with the struggles that they've had in the bubble and before the bubble, I think there's a lot more of a prove-it mentality among, you know, fans and onlookers and all that, which, you know, I think rightfully so.
Yeah, that game one against the Celtics, of course, prompting Paul Pierce to famously say, "I think it's over," in favor of the Celtics. That you had plenty of fans panicking on the Milwaukee side after that game one loss, and then of course letting Paul Pierce hear about it later in the series when the Bucks were able to bounce back. This, I don't think, presents maybe the same amount of consternation for the series itself. I think there's still probably a pretty healthy amount of the fan base that recognizes the Bucks are the better team here. They're probably still going to win this series, but they've lost 9 of 13, which is something, considering that prior to that, they'd been 52-8. Again, many of those games have various caveats you have to throw in there, and that's fine, but, you know, that is a stark turnaround, you know, when you look at it on paper. Last time I asked you where your concern meter was for this team, you said it was at a 2. That was before the loss to Memphis to close out the seeding games. That game really did not have much meaning to the Bucks at all. I'm sure it's higher. I'm sure it's not 2 anymore. But I guess as we look at the big picture, knowing this team probably will still beat the Magic, but for the first time, we have to consider the possibility that it's either going to be really tough, or maybe they don't. Maybe there is a historic upset in the making here. Or you look beyond that to the next round, the Eastern Conference semifinals, knowing that they'll face a Pacers or Heat team. And the team that's been playing, the Milwaukee Bucks team that's been playing these last few games, probably isn't going to win a series if they don't find, you know, another gear. So where is your concern meter now, having seen them lose game one to the Magic?
I'd probably kick it up to a 4.
Okay. So that's not halfway. That's okay.
Going from 2 to 4, I mean, I think that, that everything rests on game two. I'm really interested to see, you know, if this is the final like slap in the face that the Bucks needed to really wake up, you know, because they've been sleepwalking. Like, I know they won't say that. They won't agree with that. They would say they've been preparing. They've been taking this seriously. They've been working really hard and all of those things. But you have to prove it, right? Like, you have to show it in the games, and we haven't seen it. Like, these are not the Bucks we spent, you know, 65 games watching. It's just not the same team right now. Like, could they become or return to the team that they were? I think that could totally happen. But I'm going to have to see it. I have to see it for like a game. When you look at, you know, the games they played in the restart, like it's not like they were just blowing teams out or having a ton of success, right? It was a lot of games that were closer than we're used to. Games where even when all their guys played were tough. And, you know, we haven't seen the Bucks be the Bucks. I don't think it's been since like the start of March. And even then, I think that was like an 8-point win against the Charlotte Hornets. So it's been a long time since the Bucks have really been the Bucks. And I think that everyone who is doubting them, at least momentarily, or at least saying, hey, I want to see it before I really get back on the bandwagon, I think that's totally, you know, totally fine and warranted, because this team just hasn't at least earned or deserved the benefit of the doubt with the way that things have been going recently. Not saying that they can't get back there, just that right now, you know, you want to see them actually make some headway before you say, okay, like, I would have some confidence in them going forward. Because right now, I mean, if you put this team against the Heat in the second round, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't be picking the Bucks. And yes, that could be, you know, just because, you know, that could be short-sighted, and there's a lot of historical precedent, and you could say, hey, like, you know, what the Bucks were, what the Heat, but who either of these teams were, or any of these teams that are still remaining were, you know, it doesn't matter. It's who they are now, and who the Bucks are right now is a team that, you know, still is struggling to regain what they had.
You mentioned that Giannis was still good. Of course he was. And Eric Bledsoe had an okay game. Chris Middleton struggled shooting the ball. You figure he'll probably rebound to some degree. Brooke Lopez was so good in the seeding games. We did not see that in game one. His frustration shining through, like you mentioned. Also just, you know, wasn't able to put it together on the floor. And the bench guys, just there were times where Coach Bud, as he sometimes will do, put an entire a bench unit on the floor, and occasionally that team has looked fine. Even on Tuesday, there was a moment where they looked pretty good, but there've been a lot of guys that have just struggled, like from really the word go. Once they got into the bubble, Dante DiVincenzo's on that list. You know, George Hill's been up and down. Wes Matthews is a little banged up, so that's probably something that's going to be a little bit of concern. Do you anticipate any changes to this rotation? Do you think that some guys are going to start losing some playing time the way that things have shaped up to this point?
Not yet. I think Bud likes to keep guys active and in the rotation and things like that. If anything, I mean, we'll see if Ersan Ilyasova is available with his elbow issue that he has, if that displaces anyone. But like Robin Lopez only played 2 minutes. Like he's somebody who maybe in a future game they just say, you know what, forget it. We're not even going to bring Robin in, because maybe they figure they don't need him with the Magic, you know, being banged up inside, maybe not going as big. Yeah, I'm just interested to see if Dante DiVincenzo is able to kind of get out of the funk he's been in. I mean, he has not shot the ball really well from outside. He does not always seem in control on his drives. Turnovers have been an issue. And you mentioned like all those guys. I think Eric Bledsoe had been one of those guys who hadn't been playing very well, and I think today he did play fairly well. I'm not going to say he played great, but I'm going to say that, you know, relative to the rest of the team, it was Giannis and him who stood out for being, you know, passable and or to good. And so, you know, I don't think that it'll be shortened up very much. I think that Dante will still get chances. George Hill's definitely going to play. I think Pat Connaughton would still play. Kyle Korver, I mean, they're going to need his shooting that he can bring off the bench. Like Bud's still going to play guys. And I don't think one game is going to make him waver and be like, oh no, now I have to play guys a ton more. That's not something that he's shown in the past. So I don't think that would change now, but I think that we may see changes and differences. I don't think they went to Brook Lopez in the post like nearly as much as we've seen. And when they did, it didn't necessarily work, but it wasn't like they were going to him over and over again. Like the Magic don't have like a ton of size and bulk and strength inside. And if they can kind of spread the court a little bit and give Brook a chance to go to work in the post, that could pay dividends. I'd be interested to see if they get the ball in Chris Middleton's hands a little bit more to kind of give him more of an opportunity to get some of the shots that he likes, some of the comfort food that, you know, that Bud likes to call it, where he can get some good looks up. I just feel like the offense was still very disjointed and kind of didn't really find all the options available to them, you know, given what the Magic were doing. Like they kind of said, oh, the Magic are going to, you know, muck up the paint, make things really hard for us. Oh no. And like we just didn't see enough of like the counters that we've seen or heard discussed in the past. And so I want to see how they can use those counters and how they can adjust, because this is a team that was really good in the half court. Yes, they were really great in transition, but like when they got in the half court, they were a pretty efficient team in the regular season. They were a really good offense overall. And so, you know, how can they, you know, adjust and make changes to not just personnel, but to how they are utilizing those personnel and, you know, attacking a defense that is sinking hard and trying to cut off the lane.
Yeah, a little tip of the cap to the Magic defense. They're a good defensive team. They are not bad. And even though they don't have a rim protector, Giannis was kept from the rim for the most part. They really did muck up the paint. Giannis didn't get a lot of shot attempts early. You could probably pin that on the Bucks, but the Magic were able to you know do what they do to limit him. And then, like you said, offensively things just were not in sync. And that sort of offense defense sort of all works together, as everyone knows. And that was never able to get into a rhythm on either end of the floor. Before I let you go, I gotta ask you: are you prepared for 36 hours of hot takes about where Giannis will play after next season when he's done with the Milwaukee Bucks, when he is thrown up his hands in disappointment because the Bucks didn't win a championship and has moved on? Are you ready for this?
I like Giannis. Probably won't pay any attention.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
It's just, I don't know. I mentioned last year's Celtics series and the sky is falling and all that stuff after game one, and then things obviously took a turn. I know a lot of people have been, I feel like this tweet was like ubiquitous of like, oh, hey, remember like last year's eventual champions lost to Orlando in the first round, so the Bucks were on track to win a championship. It's like, okay, like fine. Like last year's champions didn't get worked by the Magic in the first round or in the first game of the first round.
And they were playing like, very well going into the playoffs. That was absolutely a blip on the radar for what the Raptors were doing last year.
Yeah, that was like a really great. I remember watching that in like a pizza place. I was like with my wife's family and we were doing some stuff and then we went to some random pizza place and I was watching the game and I was like, oh, wow, like this is fun. This is a good game. Today's game, I would not say was fun or a good game, whether I covered the Bucks or anyone else. Like this wasn't close. It was the one seed getting trampled by the eight seed in a game where you would have, if you like were an alien watching this from a different like, you know, planet, you'd be like, oh, like, is the one seed won, right? Like, because that's what it looked like. So, you know, yes, like there are going to be hot takes. There are going to be all these diagnoses of the Bucks and plans for their eventual collapse and what will happen and where Giannis will go and all these things. But there are a lot of games still to go. I don't think anyone necessarily believes that the Bucks are going to lose this series. If they do, then all of the talk of the coming apocalypse and relative to the Bucks, the Bucks apocalypse, Buckpocalypse, whatever you want to call it, then that's warranted. If they lose the series, we can talk about all kinds of crazy stuff if the Bucks lose in the first round. But until that day happens, and until we get to that point, I'm gonna generally pump the brakes and say, all right, let's see what happens in the next game, because that can change the narrative entirely depending on what happens.
Would that be the Apocalypse Tedekumpo? Can we go with that?
We have to work on the pronunciation.
Yeah, we're going to have to workshop that to death, I'm afraid. Bucks play on Thursday. That's a little bit later on. Most of these games are in the noon hour, but this one on Thursday will be at 5 o'clock p.m. local time. Magic Bucks game 2. Huge moment in the Bucks season. Didn't think we'd get to that so quickly in the postseason, but here we are. And that'll be a big one. I know a lot of Bucks fans will be watching intensely with interest in that one. Matt, we will chat again very soon. Thanks for joining me.
All right. Can't wait till we talk again.
You will find everything he has to say at jsonline.com. Also find him on Twitter. Let him know what you think of the podcast, Matt_Velasquez, or find me. My name is JR Radcliffe at JR Radcliffe on Twitter. Plenty of my stuff at jsonline.com as well. Thanks for checking us out. Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, leave a comment, leave a rating and review, all that stuff. And we will chat with you again next week. Ta-ta.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.